current crisis in the Strait of Hormuz.
Minister, thank you for joining SBS News.
Pleasure.
You visited Australia a few weeks ago to speak to our foreign minister, I believe. What was the significance of that visit at this time?
Given where we are in terms of the energy crisis, I think it's particularly significant because not only did I have the opportunity to meet up with Minister Penny Wong, I had on the same morning itself met up with Minister Madeleine King, Minister Chris Bowen, and also Minister Don Farrell. In fact, I had a quick lunch with Minister Don Farrell, and I had the opportunity to attend your Senate as well. So it's really an eye-opener.
And why is it important, that relationship with Australia at this time when it comes to energy security?
We are both very, very long-standing partners, and our partnership is very well-grounded with the deep trust and, you know, the many decades of goodwill that we've built between our leaders. And particularly in times of crisis like this, I think that reassurance that we're there for each other is all the more poignant. And it is important, particularly in a crisis of this kind of proportion, that close partners should come together, work closely together, have open dialogues, and see how we can help each other through this crisis in a much better way, emerge even stronger.
Assurance, given some of the uncertainty, much of the uncertainty around supply upstream, in particular from the Middle East.
For us, we have, if you look at our past record, we have never imposed any form of export restrictions. And that has pretty much been through multiple crises that we've all gone through in the past, and particularly most recently, even during the Ukraine-Russian war, even during COVID itself, we did not import any export restriction. For us, we are a global hub, and trade is existential for us. We constantly diversify all of our sources, and I think you would also recognize the fact that we are quite a major oil trading hub within the region itself, and possibly worldwide. We have got 150 oil majors here located on this very tiny island of ours. So in terms of the sourcing, we're very diversified from all over the world. While the Middle Eastern source today offers a very limited opportunity for us, but we have been able to diversify the sources from much further away. So it's not a matter of getting restrictions and then for that to then percolate downwards. I think for us, it's actively going upstream to find out new sources, diversify them.
And do you think that...
I think what is happening in the Straits of Hormuz itself could be a wake-up call for many, many economies. I think between Australia and Singapore, our relationship, it is a very strong affirmation of the trust we have in each other, and also in terms of the goodwill and
focus on economic resilience and essential supplies. Will that legally binding protocol have a strong focus on energy supplies?
We will focus primarily on trade in essential supplies, on fostering economic resilience, particularly in energy, because both our countries, we are so dependent on energy. So on the one hand, for us, as we continue our business being the refinery hub in the region itself, we will continue to source upstream supplies and always try our best to fulfill the orders in terms of exports to Australia for the refined petroleum products, the petroleum oils, and vice versa. Obviously, we also look to Australia for that consistency in supply of liquefied natural gas to Singapore. Some of that liquefied natural gas is also needed to continue to run our refineries to keep it up to mark in terms of the operational capacities.
On LNG, we'll move to that now. What sort of challenges is Singapore facing from some of those impacts on the LNG refineries, the LNG hubs in Qatar? And what role could Australia play? How much capacity would Australia need to provide to perhaps help, you know, deal with some of the challenges that could come as a result of those issues upstream in the Middle East?
We have diversified the sources of LNG, and Australia is one very significant supply source country to ourselves. On top of that, we've got piped natural gas as well from Indonesia, from our immediate neighbours, Indonesia and Malaysia. We also source for LNG supplies from Mozambique, from the US, and of course, prior to the war itself, from Qatar as well. Qatar provides slightly less than 10% of our overall supply. We have been able to source for cargoes outside of Qatar from all over the world. And of course, any incremental LNG cargo from Australia is very welcome. In fact, I believe when Prime Minister Albanese visited our SLNG facility in Jurong Island itself, that LNG cargo actually came from Gorgon, Australia itself. So you can see how close we are in terms of both our economic resilience and how mutually dependent we are on each other.
The Australian government domestically is facing some pressure to increase some of the taxes on those exports of gas to reap the benefits of the surge in global prices. Would such a move raise concerns for a country like Singapore?
We have always followed a very transparent trading system, of course, multilateral rules-based global trading system itself. And we believe that in the business-to-business context, the B2B context, they've been able to price in some of these fluctuations. Of course, if the tax system gets a bit out, there's always a market competitive pricing out there for these businesses to be able to balance. I think in the short run, short of knowing ahead of time what that tax is going to be, at this point in time, is a bit premature for me to comment.
Would you consider such a tax, though, you know, to be potentially breaking some of those principles of multilateral trade?
I think that that tax, if it's all from one particular country itself, that ability to stomach or to wear that completely would raise the bar. But like I said, we do have a very diversified portfolio. And depending on the pricing mechanism itself, I'm quite sure businesses downstream would be able to adjust.
Our Prime Minister also said he was open to expanding gas fields to meet Singapore's energy demands. Do you welcome that? And would there be potential for Singapore to perhaps take an interest in some of those fields as well, given, you know, the sovereign wealth funds that you possess?
We welcome, of course, the opening up, the exploration of more gas fields. Because for us, notwithstanding that we the fact that we do have a decarbonisation schedule, timetable and timeline, we think that natural gas for the foreseeable future will still pretty much be a transition fuel for many, many countries, in fact for countries all over the world, before they can achieve their net zero target. And you know, any increase in the options or and even the optionalities of access to gas fuels is always a welcome move. As far as whether our sovereign wealth funds like GIC or Temasek would take an active interest, the government, we don't get involved in decisions that these sovereign wealth funds take because they are pretty much run independently. So, but we are certainly open to introducing them to the relevant parties.
Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I've give up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking back on the fuel issue, Australia obviously has come to Singapore seeking some of those commitments. Have other nations, you don't have to name them, but have other nations also looked to Singapore and been in touch, asking for guarantees around supply?
We have had countries reaching out to us via phone, messaging and asking us to assist them in excess for certain supplies, like for instance even LPGs. So there have been inquiries.
And certainly, would you say that Australia's move in the Prime Minister coming here has helped, you know, keep that relationship close? I won't necessarily say that it's put Australia at the front of the queue, But do you think that's a significant move in terms of a two-way reciprocation of showing that Australia can be trusted as well as Singapore?
I think that is, of course, a very warm and a very, very heartwarming gesture by Prime Minister Albanese. And I don't know whether I'm at liberty to share, but my Prime Minister is also looking forward to returning the visit to Australia, hopefully in the not-too-distant future. And we are also going to have an energy ministerial dialogue sometime this year between myself and Minister Chris Bowen. And I'm sure that there will be other bilateral visits by your ministers and by by myself and my other counterparts to Australia as well.
Where do you see further opportunities for collaboration on energy?
There are possibilities for the... I think last year we actually, was it November or end October, we signed the framework on the cross-border electricity trading between Australia and ourselves. We look forward to working very closely with Minister Chris Bowen on the participation in the ASEAN Power Grid, APG, for even carbon capture, storage, CCS. We're discussing with Minister Chris Bowen. And at the same time, like what you have shared earlier on and your Prime Minister has said, that with the opening of more gas fields and so on, what kind of participation would our Australian partners and counterparts be looking at? I think these are all on the table itself.
And finally, wrapping up, these are obviously challenging times for a number of countries. In Australia, there is discussions about the potential of fuel rationing. I know in Singapore as well, there have been measures that have been put in place to save energy as well. How do you believe the next few months could play out? Where are the potential challenges and how will your government try and meet them?
I think that we are in this relative 2 weeks of ceasefire, and I'm sure that you are probably more in tune with what's developing behind the scene with now Islamabad, with Pakistan getting into the picture. And they have also said that China is also somehow at the back end trying to get everyone back to the table itself. We live in very uncertain and volatile times. That fortnight, that reprieve that both countries have come to agree on, we hope, of course, that it would eventually evolve into a more permanent peace, not just a ceasefire. But having said that, I think the supply chains, at least in the medium term to long term, would have been significantly impacted. The facility in Qatar, two of the trains, is the world's largest liquefaction facility in the world. Two of the trains have been damaged. Earlier on, Minister Al-Kabi, the energy minister for Qatar, shared that it could take 3 to 5 years for that facility to be repaired. There are some hope. There is some. I mean, there's some quarters who came up and said that they hope that the damage may not be that bad. Perhaps rather than 3 to 5 years, it could be closer to the 3-year mark. But who knows? Also, as a result of this big shock, a lot of countries are now re-looking at their stockpiling approach. In the past, everybody talked about open trading, connectedness, rules base, so that trade that has become a lot more efficient with just-in-time inventory. I think now countries are thinking, what should I be thinking about just in case? And once you have that kind of pivot of that thinking back into just in case, obviously you find that people will want to stock up more. Not hoarding, but stock up more just in case. So I think you're going to see some semi-permanent to permanent changes in the entire stock. And as a result of that, that was what I was sharing. This would have downstream impact on pricing, on the availability of the timing, the prolonging of the timing of those orders, those shipments coming into port. And I think we just have to be prepared for these type of permanent scarring.
2 weeks, a 2-week ceasefire, nowhere near enough then to resolve this. It would have to be ongoing and how long ultimately do you feel these impacts will last?
I think the saving grace, ironically, is that the world has never had a more abundant amount of oil and gas. I mean, you look at all of that shale gas, the shale oil, and all of it. Now, the US is the next exporter of oil and gas. And as Prime Minister Albanese himself has shared, that there are more gas fields that could potentially open up in Australia. So we are at this point in time where actually you do have a lot of supply, the supplies that could match demand. What is causing this chokehold is the supply chain, the logistics of that transportation. How do we bring that supply to match that demand? And this is where the shipping lines, the shipping lanes are so important. And I want to add that I hope that all countries, whether it's small powers to medium powers to large powers to superpowers, can acknowledge UNCLOS, that the rights of passage through streets is a right. It's not something that, you know, parties should come together to renegotiate on. This is a right that has been enshrined.
And that is important because there are critical shipping lanes, I know, in this region, and this, you know, there's been lots of contemplation, speculation about what happens if there is conflict in this region too. Is that a wake-up call for these Southeast Asian nations?
I think we should all be aware. And people should go back to what is agreed on in UNCLOS. And I'm very happy that both my Prime Minister and your Prime Minister agreed that that has to be the basis.
That is everything that I have. Thank you so much.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate the chat.
Thank you. Thank you.
Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I've given up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.